Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our council session today. We'll begin with our invocation. It's a pleasure to introduce again one of our colleagues, and that's Montiel Jones Hill.
Please stand for the invocation. Good, gracious, and almighty God. God of yesterday, God of today, and God of tomorrow, God of eternity. We, your created beings, pause now before your awesome and magnificent presence. We pause, God, to give you praise and thanksgiving. We praise you because you are an awesome God, a wonderful, gracious God. And we thank you because you have brought us to this place once again. You have given us the privilege of being in the governing body of your city. And God, it is your city. It is not ours. It's yours. You have allowed us to be here for a short time. And God, as we come together today, I pray that we will make decisions that are pleasing in your sight. But God, I move beyond governance, and I ask you to touch each and every person under the sound of my voice. Touch each of us, God, where we're weakest. Strengthen us where we need it the most. And God, finally this morning, I want to offer a special prayer for our mayor. Give him grace, give him courage, and pour out your mercy upon him and his family. This is our prayer. Amen.
Ms. Rosella, could you lead us to the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty.
Well, again, good morning, everyone. Madam Secretary, let's begin with our morning speakers. We'll do that, and then we'll move to the presentations and on to our agenda.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. We have several morning speakers that have signed up this morning. The first being Tamara Washington. Is Ms. Washington here? Kevin McMahon. Kevin. Jeffrey Jacoby. Mr. Jacoby, if you come forward and let me recite the rules.
And enthusiastically, he's here.
Let me recite the rules before you get started, okay? Citizens and other visitors attending city council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council or while attending the city council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant is armed and so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. You have 3 minutes to speak. You get that on the board. And you 30 seconds, you'll get a amber light on the board, and then we'll have a red sign that says stop. Okay. State your name and your address for the rest of the service. You can begin.
Good morning. My name is Jeffrey Jacoby. I live at 5920 La Vista Drive, Dallas 75206 in Council District 14. I almost didn't come this morning. I almost didn't brave the elements, but I feel as though this is important enough to be here, and I thank you for having me. I'm here first and foremost to thank the council for the near unanimous vote on the permit delay for the first gas drilling permit. I can only presume that this delay is going to be applicable when the second permit comes up for a vote. It's my hope, and it's the hope of a multitude of Dallas residents, that the council will assure them this morning that this delay applies not just to the first permit, but to all drilling permits that may come up now or in the future. If you would confirm this fact in front of the cameras in the audience this morning, I know a lot of folks would rest easier. I'm also urging you to recommend strongly to your CPC rep to delay or deny future permits until after October 26th. As Council Member Newman stated, we need to study this issue. Given the myriad problems that other cities have experienced with laissez-faire drilling practices, this is a prudent maneuver, and it requires leadership, and your leadership will determine the future of Dow. And speaking of the future, I'm looking for the task force, and I'm hoping that this task force coalesces sooner than later. I signed a letter along with a number of other environmental reps that contained a list of suggestions for who comprised this task force. And so my question is this task force something that the council is serious about? Is this something that the citizens can count on to protect us now and in the future? After the statements that Councilman Newman and others have made, I would find it hard to believe that you all would allow this conversation to just devolve into placating lip service. So we and others are looking forward to participating to an open and transparent dialogue about gas drilling in Dallas. And I trust that the rhetoric on this issue is a precursor to action. And today, I'm asking for a commitment from any and all of you to this task force. Will this task force happen? Will these drilling practices be examined in detail? And finally, I just want to iterate the point that some council members have already expressed, and that's that we need good environmental reps on this task force. Yes, technical experts. But we also need representatives of the community. The voice of the people needs to be heard. This needs to be open. Let the sun shine on this process. I know that you all are committed to doing the right thing. We have 8 months. The next 8 months will determine the future of our city. Get environmental reps there. Listen to the voice of the people. The clock literally is ticking.
Thank you. Appreciate you being with us. Matt Sinter?
Next speaker is Anthony Pace, followed by John Bryan. Mr. Pace? Mr. Bryan?
Association of Taxi Operators, Mr. Mayor, and members of the council, I'm here today to ask on their behalf that you reconsider the CNG head-of-the-line policy that you adopted some time ago, not only for reasons that I think are obvious to everyone, but also because it's better economics for our city, it's better environmental policy, and very importantly, it's justice. We ask simply that you restore to the taxi drivers into the taxi cab industry the same traditional role that's played by taxi cabs in every major city, a departure from which we have taken with this most recent policy. I think it's possible that many of you may have voted for this without realizing what its impact is, but it has destroyed the livelihoods of individual cab drivers, and it is destroying more and more of them every day. It should be reversed. It is unprecedented really anywhere for a council or a legislature or a Congress to adopt a far-reaching environmental policy and that has serious economic impact without phasing it in to give the industry the opportunity to adjust to it. Instead, this was adopted immediately. It destroyed the value of the taxi cabs that were already owned by these individual drivers. They are in hopes that hanging on in hopes that you're going to reverse this policy, but if you don't, they lose the value of their cars. Why is that? That's because if you can't proceed to the front of the line in order, you can't make a living at our airports. So I ask you to consider, would you have done this with any other industry? If any other industry had come to you and said, please phase in the policy if you're going to adopt it, you would have said yes, because that traditionally is the way it's always been done here and in every other governing body. Instead, with regard to all of these individual drivers who are entrepreneurial by nature, very talented group of people, you have imposed it overnight, destroyed the value of their taxi cabs, and left them unable to make a living at the airport, caused them to spend money on lawyers like me and others to litigate, to come before you, to try to find a way to rescue them from this situation. It's not something that you would have done to any other industry. I think it may have been done without full understanding of the impact of it, and I'm here today to ask you to reconsider it, to change it, to phase it in, and to include every kind of clean air vehicle, not just one kind, because the kind that you chose does not allow a taxi driver to go out to a dealer and buy a car. Instead, he has to go and buy a new car and then go and pay $12,000 to $15,000 to have it converted to CNG. That's beyond the economic ability of a taxi cab driver. And you have, by virtue of adopting that policy, possibly inadvertently, delivered them into the hands of Yellow Cab, Cowboy Cab, and the great big cab companies. It's not good economics. It's not good environment. It's not good transportation policy. It's exceedingly unfair, and it's cost many, many of these people their livelihoods, and will cost more than their livelihoods if it's not rectified in the future. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you.
Our next speaker is going to be Deborah Westbrook. Ms. Westbrook? Verity McLean? And David Kessa Afar? Mr. Mayor, that's all of the speakers this morning.
Being here, and we're recognizing the beginning, the first week of Black History. There will be further programs throughout the rest of the month as we recognize the month of February in Black History. Let me first say that I don't know if I should tell y'all when I was born, but I was born in 1952. And since 1952, as a baby, I grew up in the British shop with my mom. My mom is a beautician, a cosmetologist, and on a daily basis, crawling around on the floor, I grew up in the hair business. And I grew up in yesterday's hair business, when and before the today's styles have taken over the new wave of the look of females. With that being said, I think that I can pronounce myself as being a doctor in the hair business, because I've been there from the start, and I have lived through the transition. Upon seeing that and going back to the history of Madam C.J. Walker, the hot comb, the lady that invented the hot comb, the straightening comb. And that's that hot iron comb that you put on the fire, and you go through and do all of the, make the necessary transition. Well, one night I was watching television at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I got involved in a show that was on called Good Hair. And any time that you see something about, or I see something involving beauty and hair, then I just gravitate to it automatically. In watching it, it gave a chronological documentary of the history of hair and the hair industry. In watching that, I was so very proud to see someone from Dallas, Texas, in today's style and today's fashion, being featured on this show, who has a business here in Dallas, who is a cosmetologist and has been in the hair business since 1993, is the reason I gave you back to myself and not start in 1952, because I lived through the transition and have a great appreciation for entrepreneurship and Black history as it relates to hair. When you look at the fact that beauticians has been one of the businesses that have anchored the community's economic side of things, especially in the southern sector and throughout Dallas, we have an obligation, and I have an appreciation to celebrate when I see someone excel. With that, let me say that this one young lady who represents Dallas and represented Dallas quite well nationally and worldwide through the Good Hair and other accomplishments that she's had and through the fact that her shop is here in downtown Dallas, Texas. And and that's significant in itself, and is open and is doing well, and is a national star. Just as we celebrate the Super Bowl, there are folks coming in looking for her shop so they can get dressed and look pretty for Sunday's Super Bowl 45 here in Dallas-Fort Worth. So now, when you see that, you know you have those types of celebrities. I want to ask this lady if she would come forward. Miss Freddie Jones, better known as Freddie J. And if you notice her hair and how she has it, she is the doctor of cutting of hair and styling. And she is nationally known. She has helped propel Dallas on the map when it comes to hair cutting and styling. And her shop is in Dallas, Texas. I didn't say Duncanville, and I didn't say Cedar Hill. I said Dallas, Texas. With that, Miss Freddie Jones, it gives me so much pleasure and great pleasure to recognize and appreciate you for the things that you stood for, the people that are watching you, and the folks that are emulating and taking after you so that they can too climb to the height that you've climbed and represent such a wonderful industry. With that, let me read and say this to you. Whereas Freddie Jones, also known as Freddie J, began her career in cosmetology in 1993 and has become one of Dallas' premier hairstylists. And whereas Freddie J attends some of the top hair design companies and academics in the country, and as Dudley, Prevost Point, and Tony and Guy, and where she eventually decided that her specialty would be hair cutting, and whereas Freddie J is now considered one of the industry's leading hair cutting specialists. She travels across the nation to trade shows, to seminars, teaching and sharing information with licensed stylists. And whereas Freddie J is the founder and CEO of International Hair Symposium, which includes hair competition and advanced training classes for stylists and barbers in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. In addition, she's launched a series of educational DVDs providing stylists with new and innovative hair cutting techniques all over the world. And whereas Freddie J works and accomplishes have graced the pages of many national publications, which includes Essence Magazine, Modern Salon, Black Hair, Hype Hair, Salon Sense, Dudley Images, Behind the Chair, Encore and Cultural of Hair. Salon Sense Magazine named Freddie J one of the industry's top 50 black powerful women brokers. Powerful women brokers, that's correct. And whereas Freddie J's talent has established her as a leading nationally known stylist in 2002, she won the first place prize of $10,000 at the Bronner Brothers Hair Battle Royale in Atlanta, Georgia in 2007. She was one of the four stylists chosen to compete in the Bronner Brothers Hair Battle 60th year anniversary celebration. And whereas Freddie J is a national television personality, where she was featured in a pilot season of the reality show Tears, Shears, and Beauty on BET and HBO, and she also was featured as a stylist on the Chris Rock documentary entitled Good Hair. And whereas over three decades, Freddie J has been one of Dallas's leading business women, stylists, instructors, and trailblazers in the field of cosmetology. Now, it's a lot of whereas, but I had to go through every one of them because you deserve each and every one of them. Because let me say this personally. Every city that she went to, every time she got off the plane, they had to ask her where was she from. And the most important answer that she gave them was Dallas, Texas. So thank you for keeping and putting Dallas further on the map. Therefore, I, Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Carraway, under the signature of our mayor, Tom Leppard, and our entire city council, and Ms. Carolyn Davis, who also goes to Freddie Day. Y'all were sister or cousin. I know you had a connection. We, on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend special recognition to you, Ms. Jones, Ms. Freddie Jones of Freddie J. Thank you so kindly.
You know, Freddie, I want to thank you for Ms. Carraway recognizing you. Freddie and I, she was with the organization, which means called Sister of Color, and it's an organization where we try to help out in the community. So I just want to really thank you for all your hard work that you're doing. So I'm going to let you say something, Freddie.
I just want to thank Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Carraway and Mayor Tom Leppard and the City Council. Thank you so much for recognizing the cosmetology industry, because we do create an economic base in the community, as we have for many years. Whether it be Black, African American, Hispanic, White, we do contribute to this community, and I want to thank you for recognizing us today as a whole. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Mayor.
Jill, could I have you join me? Jill Jordan. And we've got a number of individuals that are with us today celebrating a special week, and that's Engineers Week. If I could ask them to come up. I know Rob's here, Ramon, several other folks. There are so many people in our community that make important contributions and unfortunately are not recognized, not necessarily the ones in front of the cameras or the ones making the speeches. And when you look at the services of the city and the way it provides those, the reality of it, most all of those cities don't receive, those services don't receive much recognition simply because they are done very well every single day and most of us take them for granted. But the result of those services is the work of a lot of hard is the result of a lot of hard work for the men and women who serve the city, and a lot of those services are focused on engineering. When we start thinking about our roads, when we think about water, when we think about sanitation, all the services that go into it, as well as some of the ones that go into public safety, they are made possible by folks that have dedicated themselves to the engineering profession and make important contributions. And we just want to do a proclamation today and recognize some of the good men and women who are here that are involved with our city, but also throughout our community in engineering. And Jill, I'm going to ask you to step up here, and I'll present this to you, but I want to introduce the other folks that are here. I know we've got some good friends. To simply recognize the work of engineers in our community. As I said, some of that is folks that are working with the city, but so many people that are not part of the city but are part of the general community. I'm looking out and I'm seeing other folks and thinking of all of their organizations, how important the engineering profession is to just making things work in our community and across our nation. And we just would like to recognize all the work of the engineering community. So this proclamation identifies that each year we celebrate the annual Engineers Week, and it's done around George Washington's birthday, largely because not only our nation's first president, but he was a military engineer and is a land surveyor, who, needless to say, directed a very growing society at that time, and really put in place a lot of the technical advancements that we have enjoyed since then. Engineers Week was founded in 1951 by the National Society of Professional Engineers, and it's sponsored by more than 100 engineering and scientific and education societies and major corporations. It's dedicated to increasing public awareness and appreciation of engineering and promoting engineering as a career. Unfortunately, we've seen a decline in the number of students that are going into engineering. That's a major issue for our nation. So hopefully this sort of awareness points out what a terrific profession engineering is and the contributions that can be made. It also talks about Engineering Week being that opportunity for student outreach by providing educational materials to thousands of engineers who work with 5.5 million students in elementary through secondary schools each year through classrooms, visits, and various extracurricular programs. It also talked about Engineers Week being a global initiative, including and encouraging all nations to seek the talents, the viewpoints, and intellects of women in engineering and related mathematical and science fields. And then it also recognizes the contribution of engineers in the United States and around the world, who are, and I'm quoting, to be applauded for their dedication to improving our quality of life, for revolutionizing the way we learn, live, work, and communicate, and for promoting a high standard of professional excellence. Now, on behalf of the entire City Council, with Mayor, Joe, to you and to all of our colleagues up here, I just want to present this small proclamation as a small reminder of an appreciation that we all have, and hopefully this is a step in building awareness and, as I said, really engaging the young people in our community to understand how important engineering is and what a terrific profession and route for their lives this will be. So, Joe, let me present this to you. And you want to make some comments, and I'll turn it over to
Roger.
The other folks. Roger. Roger.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Roger, you want to go? I'll turn it over to you.
Mr. Mayor and City Council, I'm Roger Begum, President of TSBE Dallas, and my office is at 1950 North Stemmons Freeway. It's indeed an honor for Dallas Chapter of the Texas Society of Professional Engineers to receive this proclamation from you for E-Week 2011. Our fellow engineers stand ready to serve Dallas and its citizens in all aspects of their lives, from infrastructure improvements and upkeep to new frontiers in energy generation and sustainable environment. One of our fellow engineers always debated his physician father that engineers save more lives by improving water and water systems than physicians improving the health systems. In any case, we're committed to serve today's needs of this community. I would like to recognize some of our board members and EWIC chairs who are present here this morning. Some of them didn't make it, but Ramon Miguel doesn't need introduction, so has Rob Franke. And, of course, we have Sophia Harvey, who's one of our past presidents, so has Jill. And thank you for being engineers serving City of Dallas. We appreciate you. Once again, thanks for proclamation, recognition of professional engineers, and the time extended to us. You guys want to make any comments, please? How about you all?
Well, Roger, we sure appreciate you very much. And again,
thanks for everything that you do.
You touched on the gamut of all of the ways engineers touch our lives.
Right.
And again, just from all of us, a big thanks. If you'll convey that to everybody in the
room, we appreciate it. We have various programs to give scholarships to high school students and college students.
Terrific. And speaking of students and young people who have gone into engineering, Ms. Margolin, I think, knows somebody that falls directly into that category.
Yeah, I am the proud mother of a son who just became an engineer in December, graduated from UT Arlington in mechanical engineering. And so so I saw firsthand the level of difficulty involved in becoming an engineer. It's not an easy major at all. And I'm also proud to say that he is employed in his profession. So.
Engineers have jobs, right? That's right.
Mayor, before you all go, Ms. Hill had a comment.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Carolyn. Ms. Margolin, congratulations to Mom on graduation. Congratulations on that boy being off your payroll. Congratulations. I'm absolutely delighted to see Mr. Miguez. Not a problem there. Mr. Miguez, you served this city very, very well for so many, many years. Always good to see you. Thank you for your service then and now. Mayor Franke, the same thing. Thank you for your dedicated public service, particularly your service to the transportation industry. And Mayor, any time that you want to spend money in Dallas, please, sir, feel free. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hill.
Our first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of the January 19th meeting.
So moved.
Motion and second. It's been moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. There are no boards and appointments this morning, so we'll go straight to the briefings. Our first briefing, and I want to do a little bit of a introduction to this. I think all of us, and I was thinking of some of the presentations that were made this morning, and I'm thinking over the last several years and really before that, of the number of different presentations that in one way or another have been trying to address the health and fitness of our community. I'm thinking about the challenges that we have in diabetes and so many other areas like that, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Suffice it to say that, needless to say, health, the fitness, is a major issue in our community. I think we all go out and see some of the individual stories, the personal side of seeing people who are struggling with health issues. But sometimes we don't think of more the macro or the cumulative effect. Clearly, health issues in our community are a big part. Working with Baylor, we created the Juanita Craft, at the Juanita Craft Center, fitness that focuses on diabetes in the southern part of our city. And we see over 600 individuals who have been worked with, everything from prevention all the way to treatment of diabetes. And we see issues and we see statistics that come out that say we're on the parallel for one out of two of our children to be suffering from diabetes because of nutrition, because of lack of exercise issues, all of those components. And all of that, of course, translates into an enormous impact on our local economy in terms of those health costs that will go into servicing those needs in the future. Needless to say, it is a big, big issue. Well, the hope is, and this is the start of it, that all of us collectively are going to work to do something about it. We are going to now have a briefing on the initial stages of the Mayor's Youth Fitness Initiative and talk a little bit about the start of that, where we would like to see that go over the years. This clearly is a long-term effort. This is not a three-month program. It's not a year program. We want to see fundamental changes in the way our children both eat and approach fitness, and that's the design of the program. It is designed to cover all the spectrums. We have children out there that we want to touch that may be somewhat fit, and we want them to be very fit. We also have to realize there's kids that we're going to have to take the very, very basic steps just to start moving along the path of becoming much more fit. We were very fortunate because an organization in our community that's been involved in a lot of different things, you see them involved in so many different things, and that's Encore, stood up and said that this is an important issue, and didn't just say it's an important issue and kind of play it off. What they did is they said it's an important issue, we want to get engaged, we want to make a difference in this community. They have made their people available. They have pushed it, I can tell you, very hard at some of the initial events, and they also put their money where their mouth is. They made a $1 million contribution, which is the seed, and I'm happy to say that now we've had other organizations that have seen the importance of this and have jumped on board. So I am very enthusiastic and optimistic about where this can go. I want to make a couple of introductions, if I could, and then what I'm going to do is turn it over to, again, an individual who has really put this a little bit on his shoulders and said, we're going to make a difference. And that's Bob Shepherd. And Bob, if you can join me up here for just a minute. There are a number of folks, and we'll get into this, and you'll get a chance to see some of the folks that have stepped up to be involved in what I think is a very, very strong executive committee. Of course, Bob is the leader of it. I'm going to turn it over to him, and he can give you a couple of opening remarks. Mike Rawlings, who, of course, is the president of the Dallas Parks and Recreation Board, Mike is actually going to work through the briefing and that sort of thing. But, Mike, we appreciate your effort on this, too. And then a couple of other people. Joel Allison. Joel is here with Bob McWhirter, both from Baylor. We appreciate both of you being here, your involvement in that. Dr. Ken Cooper, the special role, I'm going to talk a little bit about these. Clearly, Bob has put it on his shoulders to be involved. He's put his organization on the line, the contribution there. Baylor has been an enormous impact in our community. I mentioned the effort at Juanita Craft. Clearly has a special interest, given that they treat people and kind of get the implications of some of the things that we don't do right on personal habits and nutrition and exercise. And they are involved in, again, a very specific angle there. Dr. Ken Cooper is here. Clearly, the Cooper Institute is one of those names in our community that's known across the world. In addition to the Institute and all it's done, Dr. Cooper as an individual has really been the one that stepped up decades ago and said fitness, exercise are absolutely critical to health, has put together programs that are addressing that, that are making difference not only in our communities but literally worldwide. Just in China, met with the senior governmental officials there talking about fitness, talking about engaging a population there. Dr. Cooper clearly is going to be involved and brings an awful lot, but has developed metrics that start measuring this. Again, one of the things that Mike is going to talk about in a moment is the whole idea of not just doing programs but actually measuring to make sure that we're getting success there. Our Dallas County Commissioner, John Wiley Price, thank you very much for being there. Again, they see the angles a lot from the health side. Parkland, a lot of the medical programs that we have in this community are driven by the county. They understand how important nutrition exercise is, and Commissioner, we appreciate your involvement in it. Doug Quinn, who is here, Doug, with FC Dallas, working with Clark Hunt, again, a sports side of it, again, stepping up and saying that this is important, and appreciate that. So with that, I believe this is a major, major initiative. I am so very appreciative to all the people that I identified and the other ones who have gotten involved, said this is an important issue. I can tell you, long into the future, and I'm literally talking decades, I think this is going to make a difference in our community. It's the right way to approach it. It's comprehensive. It addresses the entire spectrum of it. And with that, Bob, can I turn it over to you for a couple minutes? Bob, thanks for everything you're doing.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Mary. Good morning. I'd like to spend just a couple of minutes giving you a bit of the background as to why we're here and how we've gotten to this point, and then turn it over to Mike. If we can turn to our first slide, which someone besides me is controlling. There you go. To address the challenge, the reason we're here today is the crisis that is the declining health and fitness of our children. It's not just a Dallas, Texas issue. It's certainly a national issue. We've all read articles on it. We've seen frightening statistics on this issue. Unfortunately, part of what we're here to tell you today is Dallas is worse than the national average. It's worse than the state average. So it's a more acute problem in Dallas, Texas than it is across the country. There are a number of statistics on this page. Focus down to the second bullet that says 1 in 5 Dallas third graders passed the state-mandated fitness program. 1 in 5 third graders in the city passed it. 1 in 3 statewide, which is certainly nothing to be proud of. 1 in 5 in Dallas is a real problem. The third point says only 1 in 3 high school students gets the recommended level of physical activity. A study by Children's Medical points out that a number of our kids live in zones where you cannot get access to fruit and vegetables. So what's the result of the poor activity and the poor nutrition of our kids? It manifests itself in a number of chronic health problems, which is delineated in the next last bullet. I won't read them all, but let me pick just one and talk about diabetes for a moment. Diabetes in this country 20 years ago, 4% of the country had diabetes. Today it's 8%. In South Dallas, it's 12%, 15% higher than the national average. In the current trends, 1 in 3 children born after the year 2000 will develop type 2 diabetes in their lives, 33%.
And as we've talked about, in key parts of our community, it's 1 in 2.
So it's just a devastating problem. This would be devastating, obviously, to these children as they grow up, to their self-esteem, to their performance in school, to their futures. And also devastating to the city and to society as we bear the cost of the lack of productivity and the health care burden. By no one's design of our health care system could we bear the cost of those types of numbers. It would be devastating to our city. So if we turn to the next page, that's why we're here. On the next page, Encore has focused a lot of its civic contributions and civic involvement to the area of health and fitness. We began discussions with the mayor last summer around recreation centers in the city. And we were committed to a long-term initiative to improve the health of our kids, focused on using the recreation center so that we could help this initiative, but also help revitalize the recreation centers of the city. So long discussions between the mayor, Mike, and myself, we clearly shared a similar passion, results in the formation of the Mayor's Youth Fitness Initiative. We committed $1 million of seed money to that and committed to stay involved. What's ambitious in an initiative is this takes a lot more than just the three of us. And as the mayor said, we've recruited some really talented people to take this. And Mike's going to describe to you where we're going.
Thank you, Bob.
first of all, appreciate your leadership, and thank you, Mayor, for what you've done. And I think it's a great initiative, and several of you, including Councilman Atkins, has been very involved in this. Also, I'd like to introduce two of the Park Board members before I get started. Lee Kleiman is the chairman of the Planning Committee from District 11, and Larry Jones from District 13. I appreciate that. We didn't brief the Park Board last week because we wanted to show it to you first.
And Mike, if I could just interject, I thought Bob was going to do it, but Debbie Dennis is with us from Encore.
She's going to come up.
Got it. And then Brenda Jackson. I just wanted to make sure we got that up. Good.
So what this got to do with us, I think, is the city council and your predecessors have built a very robust and good park system. But I think at times it catches more than it needs to pitch. We need to set some agendas, and I think our park system is going to be the skeleton for support of this system. It's not going to just be in the park system. You're going to hear we're going to be using the Y's, we're going to be using the Boys and Girls Clubs and other organizations, but it's got to start here at home. We're going to get DISD involved. We're going to use this existing system to be the resource. We needed bricks and mortars to be able to do it and to deliver real benefits for our folks. We've got that ample system. We've got 43 rec centers, 16 pools that are open, 100 miles of trails. So we've got the system. We're going to walk before we run, as you see this. And we are currently reorganizing our programs at those rec centers to make this kind of a hand in glove to make this work. So the next slide, you'll see that I think Bob's already said and the mayor's already said it. We've got to attack this as if this is a huge issue for our Dallas area. And we are doing that. I think the next slide will show you how excited we have. It's all about people first, and so we've got a pretty robust executive committee. Our strategy was this. We wanted to get political leadership with the mayor and Commissioner Price. We wanted to make sure we had money. We've got Encore, we've got Lala, who is a major dairy in this city, giving us a significant amount of money. Steve McCormick is sitting on it, he's a CEO. We wanted nutrition. We've got the dairy, Jeff Partridge, who's the CEO of Combs Produce, right by the farmer's market, is going to bring the produce side of this because nutrition is important. We wanted the sports world. So we've got all the teams, the Cowboys, the Mavericks, FC Dallas, the Rangers signed up for this as well. And we wanted the medical side of this. Joel is here representing Baylor. We've got a best practice in Juanita Craft that's going to go across the system. And we're really proud to recruit Dr. Cooper. And Dr. Cooper, would you just take a moment? And I think I learned a lot in listening to you about this. And would you just come on up here and talk to City Council about what you're seeing out there with our community? I mean, this is really, truly one of the great Dallasites that we've got, and I appreciate you doing this.
Well, thank you, Mike, and as you know, I've been obsessed with this bumblebee and our children for some time. As a result of Senate Bill 530 in 2007, we were mandated to start testing children in Texas using what's called the Fitness Gram. The Fitness Gram is a testing vehicle that we've used since 1982. It tests the obesity, endurance capacity, strength, and flexibility of our children. So starting in early 2008, we tested 2.6 million children throughout Texas, the 3rd to 12th grade. All right, that was done last year, 2010, to the extent we tested 2.9 million of the 3.1 million children, the 3rd to 12th grade throughout the state of Texas. The results have been a disaster. We noticed that only one-third of the third-grade students could pass the simple test, rank in the top 80 percentile on the fitness gram. It went down every year until less than 10% of high school seniors could pass the simple test. Also, the obesity problem is rampant in this state. Our children rank seventh as far as having the fattest children in the country. We have up to 20% of our children obese, top 5 percentile, and 40% that are overweight or obese. It's a disaster that's going to be worse in the future, as mentioned, by the problem with diabetes, the problem with hypertension, heart disease, etc. But one of the dramatic things we've discovered with our testing for fitness gram around the country, nearly around the world now, has been a perfect correlation between the levels of fitness and the grades kids make in school. A physically fit body, a brain function together. Second, we've seen a clear relationship between absenteeism from school and dropout rates from school as relates to fitness. And number three, equally important, is relationship between fitness and drug, gang, and violence problems in the school. That's the reason the mayor mentioned that I was invited to go to China, because they were intently interested in what we found in Texas regarding academic achievement and levels of fitness. I hope we don't step back, because I've been disturbed in Texas, and particularly in Dallas, to see how we rank. In testing the students in Dallas, the 17 different districts that we have, the best statistics came from Highland Park, but only 33% of their third graders could pass the test. Or they went down to, and looking at Dallas Independent School District, only 11% could pass the test. That's how bad it is. You think it's an unreasonable test. Nowhere is 33% of the third graders in Highland Park could pass a simple test. In El Paso, Texas, 69% passed the same test. Why? It's not economic. It's because of dedication of the community. Having good PE teachers and having support of the mayor, people like this, we can change Dallas. With a terrible statistic right now throughout the state, throughout the country, I'm dedicated to help change this. I think we can, if we understand we have to do this, evaluate, educate, motivate, implement, and then reevaluate. We're going to help you do this. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cooper.
He is giving his time for free, his organization, his metrics, and his science. So we're very lucky to have that. Give us five more minutes, and we'll tell you how this will work. Encore not only gave us money, but they gave us a loaned executive. Debbie Dennis is our loaned executive director of this program. She's been working very hard, and she and Paul will kind of walk you through a little bit of the details. Debbie?
You can tell I am very blessed. I work for a great organization that supports the community and supports me, and I want to thank my boss, Bob Shepard, and Brenda Jackson for their commitment and my opportunity to be involved in this. We can go to the next slide. What's our vision? I mean, this is a major opportunity, and it's not something, as Dr. Kenneth Cooper and everybody said, we're not going to get there overnight. But we do have a vision. We want Dallas kids to be the healthiest kids in the nation, and that's a wonderful target for us to be after. And you've already heard from Dr. Cooper, there's proof that if I'm fit as a kid, I'm going to learn better and I'm going to be healthier, and we really want to create that healthy future for families. Next slide. So what's our plan? We have a major plan, and this initiative seeks to make a difference, not a difference overnight or through a single program, but actually through long-term sustainable change. But it has to be fun. If it's not fun, the kids won't stay involved. So we do want to make Dallas Parks and Recreation System a fundamental part of this incremental change. It's key, it's critical. A lot of the kids we need to reach, they can't afford to go to a fitness center. Those centers in the community are where we can make a difference and where the community's at. It's important, though, where we'll be different is we need to use a consistent measurement tool. A lot of people are doing great things, but they're not measuring their progress. So how can we do that? And this is about all kids, getting all kids engaged. Sometimes kids are intimidated by sports, but they enjoy sports. They like to watch them. And so we want to leverage the relationships that we have with the sports organizations, but also we want to incent kids and reward differently. It's not about a competition against another kid, but it's really about me doing better. So how do you reward me when I do a change? Next slide. So if one of the critical things is we have to get right is not only the fitness, but the nutrition aspect. This is something that Commissioner Price has talked to us a lot about. If we can't get the fitness, the nutrition right, junk in, junk out. So it's really going to be a huge, probably our biggest challenge and greatest opportunity. So how do we make that happen? One of the things that's happened at Juanita Craft that's a great example in South Dallas is the Friday Farm Stand. So in that community, there's not a place, a grocery store, where they can get fresh fruit. How do we take that and make that happen at recreation centers where families have an opportunity to buy affordable fresh fruit? And then how do we recognize and reward kids? But we'll have to get the nutrition part right. Next slide. And as I mentioned before, how do we measure our success? How do we really tell that we've changed the way kids feel and that they're performing differently. And so how we measure and partner with our healthcare partners to figure that out. And so tracking and outcomes will be critical, and we hope to work with our healthcare partners to figure that out. Next. So what is the structure? What is this thing called the Mayor's Youth Fitness Initiative? And you see we're calling it MyFi. We picked up on that Wi-Fi, MyFi. It's a public-private partnership. We have an executive committee, which you saw the names, many people we've recruited. We hope to recruit one or two more corporate sponsors that bring funds with them, because that'll be critical. There's an executive director. My company has allowed me to be the interim loaned executive director, which I am so excited about. That will not mean that I won't focus on those other things that you as a city council expect me to do. And I'll work closely with the executive committee, as well as the board as key stakeholders, and my partner in the parks department, Paul Dyer, to bring this forward. So we look forward to working together. I would like to invite Paul to come up and talk about the programs and the conceptual model for the flow of programs in Mayor's Youth Fitness.
Thank you, Debbie. As you can already see, this is an incredible spotlight shining on the kids in Dallas, more specifically the kids in our recreation centers. We are very blessed to have this program, and thanks to the relationship between Dr. Cooper and Baylor Hospital and Joel Allison and his staff, this program is just, it's launching much faster and much higher than I ever thought it could. So we are very excited in the recreation program to see this come. It will be a program enhancement of our existing activities. What we have now is we have great after-school programs and youth sports, but this will take us to another level. It will allow the kids to come in and benefit from the point of nutrition and wellness to make them healthier children, and also bring in their families. As Debbie mentioned, these farm stands, I am so excited about these farm stands. Jeff Partridge with Coons Produce has really stepped up and said, we can do this, we can provide produce for the kids at these rec centers, starting off, as Mike said, slowly, and maybe building, hopefully someday, maybe a farm stand at every rec center for the participants to come in, bring their families, and secure the produce they need for a healthy lifestyle. So, as I mentioned, the youth sports is a big part of this, but we are not ignoring the kids that are not engaged in sports as well. The kids that just come in that are more sedentary, we believe they have the ability to step up and participate in Wii games and other activities in the gym. So we're going to make sure that they're all tested, measured, and brought forward regardless of their activity level. It will keep kids off the street. We'll have more kids engaged. We'll keep them at the rec center longer. Some kids come in now for soccer for 3 months and then go away. This program will keep them there year-round. We'll measure them, test them, and there'll be ongoing programs because of the enhancement that's being provided by Encore. So we appreciate so much that. The rec centers, as I mentioned, will be the hub of this program. We hope that someday it'll grow outside of the recreation centers, and even into the communities and some of our other service providing partners like the Y, Boys and Girls Club, and others. But right now we're focusing on the rec centers, and this is a beneficiary. So the park system will be the recipient of this program early on, and it will grow from there. So with that, I'll turn it back to Debbie. Debbie?
The next slide, please. So this is just a real high-level model that kind of speaks to our current partnerships with two of our healthcare partners. You've already heard from Dr. Cooper about the Fitness Gram, which is already a tool that's used by the Texas Education Agency. And so we're all about not reinventing the wheel. How do we leverage those existing tools, such as the Fitness Gram, and partners, such as the Cooper Institute? In addition, as we've talked about Baylor and the Diabetes Health and Wellness Institute, if you haven't been to Juanita Craft, you need to go. I encourage you to go. There's exciting things going on there. And one of the things that they started is a new program called Total Recreation, and that's the model we want to follow as we look at how we go to other centers. And it's all about starting simple, keeping it fun, using the community, and getting the community and families involved. And how do you engage people that might be coaches or working with kids and the current resources that are out there? So we'll be leveraging those models and working with our two healthcare partners and hopefully others as we continue. Next slide. So what are our planning assumptions for 2011? We want to target 14 recreation centers in the city of Dallas for implementing these programs this year, and we need your help. We want to look to you as a city council to help us identify which recreation centers make more sense. And one of the things we want to do is reach kids that may not be going to the recreation center today. So Paul's staff will be available and has already looked at some of these recreation centers. But we'll be coming to you and asking for your help to say, what recreation center in your district? Of course, Councilwoman Davis already has a recreation center in her district, Juanita Craft, but that doesn't mean we can't look at another one. But again, what we want is your help in figuring out where do we start. Now, will we start and do every program in a recreation center? We don't know. We're really at a high level, and that's why we're here now to visit with you all. We hope to launch some programs in the summer of this year, and recruiting sessions would start during the second quarter. Next slide. So budget. We don't have any dollars we're bringing forward today. On this slide, you see some example of things that would be a part of the budget, things like incremental staffing that would be required, programs and supplies, and also important, as I mentioned before, anything around tracking systems. And we hope to partner with our partners that already have systems and say, how do we leverage what we have at the city? How do we leverage what already exists with our healthcare partners? Scholarships and transportation and probably other things. Of course, OnCourse $1 million will be the seed money for this funding and other partners that are bringing forward funds. Next slide. The Executive Committee has not reviewed the budget. We haven't submitted it to them yet. Our goal is to finalize that by April the 1st. Team partners will be covering any incremental costs. There will not be any cost to the city. And all funds initially from the MiFi for the MiFi programs will be kept at the Dallas Parks Foundation. So I'd like to turn it back to Mike.
Thanks. Thank you, Debbie, for your leadership. So we're presenting a program, I think, that makes a big difference to youth. It's not going to cost the city any more money, and it's going to be first class. To make this successful, we're going to have to be cheerleaders as well as operators. So as we get going, I'm thinking about a contest. Okay, 14 districts, and we'll see who can get the most kids signed up this summer. So we'll get back to you, because I believe in competition, kind of racking and stacking stuff. So we'll talk to everybody, and we want those kids out there. With that, Mayor, we'll answer any questions you have.
Let's open it up to questions. Again, I want to reiterate a couple things that we said. One is, we've got terrific participation from the community. Again, Dr. Cooper adds an awful lot, the sports do, the various medical groups. It really is a terrific coming together of people who can make a difference in our community. Two is, it's comprehensive. We understand that there's a lot of kids that, to be frank with you, can't participate in the sport. So there's going to have to be that very, very basic getting people involved, doing the movements and that sort of thing. Clearly, there's some resources that are going into it. They're going to provide some seed money. We'll continue to augment those. But again, it's a long term, and we want to measure success. We want to ensure that we're making a difference to our community. With that, let me open up to questions. Mr. Atkins, do you want to start?
Thank you, Mayor. First, Mayor, thank you for bringing this project forward, and also OnCourse. There are many questions, you know, to ask, but this is probably not the right time to ask all the questions because it's a great project going forward. Mary Stone, one thing I would like for you to get more involved in, especially during our budget. You know, we got a budget coming up this year, and we're going to be working with the rec center, with OnCourse. How do we use our personnel? How do we use our facilities, our time, and the schedule, and how they're going to be, since they're going to be working with this project. So have you, it's on the same timeline with them on April 1st. You know, our budget do not get there until October 1. I know that they are going to use some of our rec center to use some of the personnel. Have y'all, to the point y'all coordinate that yet? Okay, Paul. Question to you, Paul. Mike.
Let me just answer that right quick. So the plan was, they're already doing programs in the rec centers, those personnel. So they're going to be augmenting those programs and shifting to make this the program that they're teaching. And so it's really replacement. Is that?
And I also point out a lot of the manpower is not going to come just from our recreation staff. It's going to be augmented by different organizations. They're going to put volunteers in place in a lot
And that's what I was trying to point out. I mean, it's just not our rec center. It's also volunteers, the foundation, and different corporations who come together to make sure this works right.
Exactly.
And so therefore, with an upcoming budget, you know, with our schedule, with our hours already scheduled with our rec center, it's not going to interfere with those hours. It might increase hours. Is that the first statement? Or what?
That's yet to be seen. I haven't seen all the numbers on the budget yet, so we'll have to work through that during the coming months. But certainly we would like to reserve what we have in order to make this program as effective as possible.
And the reason why I say it, Paul, is going forward with your budget, and since it's going to be a project, we're going to institutionalize this project, I don't want we just start the project 1 year and 5 years down the road, we drop the ball, you know. So I think it's very important that the Parks Department and the Foundation Department and the City of Dallas and I, but we work together to make sure this is a long term. I know this is probably a powerful program just for the City of Dallas. We still want to reach out into the county, into the state, and nationwide that we did form a great project with fitness in the City of Dallas. And again, Mayor, thank you for bringing Encore forward. You know, without your leadership, we would not be here today, but I know this was a pilot program. You're going to take everybody. I like what you're doing with 14 district, 14 rec summer. We all can compete. We do have an outlook in life, and working with Dallas Central School District, I think it's a great project. Thank you very much.
Ms. Hartman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And I just want to reiterate to Encore, thank you for the executive in charge. I think, you know, as Tanel pointed out, we are low on, you know, personnel. And to have someone of Debbie's caliber leading this program is really, really, really shows the commitment on your part, and it shows the commitment that you have to the Parks and Recs. And again, I think what I'm hearing today is that this is a program on top of what we already are doing, and that we will be getting partners to help us with additional staff when we need it, maybe using some of our partners in Big Brothers and the Y, and maybe some of them will donate some staff people to help run this program. So once again, I want to thank you for the leadership on this. I think you're going in the right direction. As someone who got type 2 diabetes as an adult, you know, my doctor's my partner. I talk to him almost every day. And it really is something you have to manage. So if we can get these kids at a younger age, and the one mantra when you get diabetes is that movement always helps. And so you're going definitely down the right track. So thank you, and thank all of our executive partners that are here with us today. Thanks.
Perfect. And to your point, Ms. Hosso, too, and Paul, you may want to touch on this. We recently completed some of the agreements with the Boys and Girls Club to work with us at some of the recreation centers too, which is starting out small, but hopefully it becomes a bigger part as we go forward, as both the two entities work together. Mr. Kelly, please.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Encore, and to the committee, and thank you too, Mayor. You've been very active in making sure that health stays at the forefront, and education through your leadership. You've done it, so I want to say thank you. Mine is just a little cleanup work. I want to make sure that since this is a great Dallas program that we're doing, one, I want to make sure that we put Beckley Sena on the map. I want to say that. So now you're looking for 13. So I want to make sure that we understand that. And then I want to also suggest that I'm going to talk a little bit about farmers market. We talked about the fruit. I want us to make sure that since we're talking about fruit and nutrition and fitness, that we purchase our fruit if we possibly can from farmers market. We must take care of those that are within our own system, and it would certainly be beneficial to those folks down there if indeed the very fruits and fitness that we're talking about, that we are getting our fruits for those recreation centers and for this program from farmers market. I want to say that. I want to take a shot every time I can to make sure that we keep the monies and keep the economic growth growing within our own communities and within the folks that we depend on. So that's what I wanted to say. The farmers market and Bakery Finance.
Terrific. Thank you. Ms. Hill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks to each of you for the presentation and for your awesome commitment to the work of health and fitness. This program is in line directly with the national initiative on health and fitness. I want us to be sure, and I'm sure my legislative team is listening, I want us to be sure to connect with the Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture is giving enormous grants
for this kind of work. The Department of Agriculture is more focused toward rural areas, but we, the City of Dallas, as soon as we heard about this initiative a few months ago, were in Washington. We were the first big city there to say, we want to partner with you, Department of Agriculture, and we have a way to do that, and this is a way to do it. Mr. Mayor, thank you for this initiative, because this fits in perfectly. I want to make sure that we let agriculture know that we've got this program and we want all of the assistance that agriculture can give us. They were elated that a big city had come to visit with them. They had the three top people from the Ag Department to visit with me and our staff when I was there. And so I want us to be very focused on that particular resource. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Salazar, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And I want to also thank all those involved. I think we have a lot of good, not only parks experience, but also business experience. The only thing I would probably say, I think it's great to reach out to all the different communities and all the different districts. But if you look at what we're trying to do, which is something different, which is something we haven't been doing, if you look at it like a business, like you start a franchise, you don't start a franchise by setting up a bunch of restaurants at one time. You started by doing one, getting the one right, and being able to duplicate the results of the one, and then making, when you have the right formula, you start going to the other areas and expanding that formula. I think if you do this right, even if you start with 14 at the beginning, we need to make sure that there is coordination, there is understanding of what is the result we're trying to achieve and how we're doing it, so that we can do the same in all different areas. A big factor in how this program progresses is really going to be the census. You know, Dallas is different from 10 years ago and way different from 20 years ago. But I think when you look at the census and you look at the demographics and you look at the reasons why, you know, things happen in a certain community, it gives you a better understanding. You know, maybe, you know, mom and dad are working two jobs and there's nobody to take the kid out to the center. I will tell you that as a child growing up in West Dallas, I didn't go to the center, and it was only two blocks away, but the reason I went to the center was they picked me up from two blocks away. And my parents had the safety and security that someone was responsible for making sure that I got there and got back. So that may be one of the simplest fixes you can do, or it may be that although the center is close by, you know, they're not familiar with it. Maybe it'll take someone just going out and talking to the parents. I host community meetings throughout my district, and a lot of times people don't want to come because they weren't asked, or people, even though you ask them, are not familiar. And so it does take a team effort to get people involved and understand what's going on. But I certainly appreciate the work that you've done so far and moving it forward. Mayor, thank you for your leadership in moving this forward. You know, we got a great donation. I think it's great, but money doesn't solve all the issues that are out there. We got to have our people in our rec centers. The people that work there are going to make the biggest difference. You know, we can set the plan, but we got to make sure we have the staff there to be able to implement these programs. You know, the worst thing we can do is set up a great program and not have the staffing levels there to make sure that it works. So with that, I want to thank you very much. I appreciate it and look forward to this coming in.
Sure. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you. First of all, I do want to thank Linda Coop. She went over to the Juanita Craft Center with me, and she was able to try out the farmers market. But I want to thank you guys for what you're doing with this initiative. But I do want to say this. I want to thank the staff and Baylor. It is Baylor who's coming up with these wonderful initiatives. And the farmers market is one of those initiatives. The youth and health fitness is one of their initiatives that they've done. But they also, and I want to thank Paul, the tied rec the rec and fitness together, rec and fitness and health together, and it is working over there. And Steve, in that area, even though it's on Spring, there are a lot of Hispanics who work out at that fitness center. I'm a member of that fitness center. And to join, it's like $7 to join, to stay healthy and fit. And so I'm amazed that the cost is so affordable. But I also want to thank the different type of celebrities that Baylor have brought to the table. Andrew Stone, who has diabetes. Ben Vereen, who has diabetes. They've brought Dr. Oz, who did a meal when Linda and I was over there on how to fix a simple meal if you have diabetes. They've had a number of celebrities there, and all of these individuals somehow have had diabetes or have diabetes or have a family member who have had diabetes. So I want to thank Baylor, and that's the first person company I have to thank is Baylor for all their hard work and initiative, and the executive director, Paul, I think is doing extremely well over at that center. She is outgoing. She loves the community, and that's the first thing. You have to love the people, and you have to love the community, even though that community might be poor. But she loves that community, and that's what I like about her. She look at everybody the same. She don't judge them. She just work with them, and I think that's a start. So I really want to thank you, Paul, for that initiative, bringing Beta and bringing Juanita Craft Rec Center together, and it is profound all over the country. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Ms. McConnell, please.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the briefing. I know that, Mike, you mentioned that you were going to include DISD, I guess other school districts as well, to participate. I think it's really important to, of course, include the nurses because they see the initial signs of early diabetes, you know, and the markings on the neck, the different, the different early signs. So I think that that's really important to start, you know, with that, because I think with the program here, and maybe they could even do, you know, lesson plans around this, and then say, you know, your nearest recreation center or your nearest place to go and work on this is such and such place in the area. So I think that would be, and Ms. Hasso mentioned movement, exercise, portion control. But I know in some of our communities is what and how to prepare. And sometimes it is a little bit more expensive to stay fit than be unfit. And I know that Commissioner Price is a health enthusiast and you know, prides himself in being fit. And I know that he goes out in the community and talks about, you know, how fitness is important to your well-being and, you know, your education and everything else. So it's out there, but we definitely need more people like Commissioner Price. I think maybe collaborating with maybe our community gardens that are popping up in our neighborhoods especially in near poorer neighborhoods as well, to maybe lend that hand in educating those folks too. I know that the elementary school, I think it might be in Mr. Atkins' district, Ronald McNair School, and they're going to celebrate their school garden and health and wellness. So I think some of the schools are already doing some of this, but you know, I think it's important to definitely collaborate with them. I know that Brenda Jackson is here, but also Catherine Guayar is here, and she's a cyclist enthusiast. So you know, that community we could just reach out to those communities as well. We've got a lot of hike and bike trails near our communities and near our schools to maybe folks can, you know, either loan or give the recreation center some bicycles and learn how to build bicycles and then take them on, you know, on the trails or the bike, you know, paths to go out there. I think you can make really a learning experience to maybe put odometers on the bicycles and then, you know, do a math class as well as, you know, either you walk or you rode a bicycle, you know, 192 miles, you know, how far did you ride? That's here to Austin. So I think it can really be both an educational and physical, you know, education project that we really can move forward. So I appreciate the briefing. Thank you, Debbie, for your leadership, and thank you, everyone, for being here. Mayor, thank you.
Mr. Tipsy, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And I think this is really a great example of public-private partnership between the city, the mayor taking the lead on this, and the private sector. There's a lot of people to thank here. Obviously, Encore stepped up with this. Baylor, Dr. Cooper, if it wasn't for you, we probably would be far less healthier than we are today, because I think you brought health to everybody's, you know, to the forefront of everybody's mind. A couple of points are, I think we need to look forward to make sure that we have adequate resources as we move along to keep this program moving on a continuous basis. It won't do us a lot of good to pop up one year, try to make kids healthy, and then let it fall off. Secondly, by spreading it all around the city, we're attacking it on a citywide basis, which is where we really need to do. And lastly, in my mind, the metric that you're putting in place to make sure that we measure the success of this, because when it comes time to continue participation, be it funding, volunteerism, or anything else, you're going to have to prove that we're making a success of this, because we certainly don't want to be listed where we are now as far as the lack of health on a lot of our kids. I think we may want to incorporate in part of your program is that kids participate in this. They can't exercise their thumbs on their telephones and their you know, pads and things like that. That's probably a huge contributor to the lack of outdoor exercise on the part of kids, because they don't know that going outside and actually exercising their bodies is the way most of us got to where we are today. And, you know, but I don't know if we'll be able to tear their telephones away from them, but we ought to at least ban it during exercise class. Thank you all very much for what everybody's doing to make this thing move forward. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Terrific. Thank you. Again, I just want to simply say thank you to everybody that's been involved. I think we set a great foundation, a chance to springboard into something that will make a difference to our community. Appreciate all of you who have been involved and put an awful lot of time and hours into this, as well as members of the board. Joel, Commissioner, Dr. Cooper, Ms. Quinn, all of you, thank you very much for all the work that you've done. I think it'll make a difference, and the only way it's going to be successful is that we've got the community that comes together in all these different pieces. So appreciate it. We're off to a good start. Terrific. Thank you. With that, Madam Secretary, and maybe I just turn it over to you, Mary, on the CDG.
This is a time of year to look at our extensions and reprogramming. We'll go through that with you briefly.
This morning, presentation reviews the existing timely expenditure requirements for the Community Development Block Grant, and we also have included our list of recommended extension and fund reprogramming that are not currently in compliance with the policy, and then we do have a small recommendation for reprogramming on the CDBG recovery funds that the city receives, and then we just have a listing of the next steps for you. The reason that we do this exercise every year is to help us make sure that we maintain our compliance with the HUD regulations that do not allow us to have more than 1.5 times our annual grant unextended at any time. And so this is tested once a year on July 31st, and we've been in compliance with this requirement, and we continue, even including our last test, which is on July 31st of last year. Additionally, the City Council has twice established policies that help us to make sure that we maintain compliance with this. The first policy established in 1993 simply says that funds must be obligated or encumbered within 12 months and then fully expended within 24 months. And then added to that policy back in 2007 were some additional benchmarks and spending categories that were added to help kind of refine those criteria a little bit further. So what we had done in the second resolution was to categorize the various types of programs that we spend our CDBG funds on just based on their intended use. So we have a lot of annual ongoing funded programs. We have some that are budgeted that are as not as specific, public improvement projects, and then we do have some funds that we have to hold for Davis Bacon restitution. So each of these different categories have their own time frame and benchmark of the expenditures of those funds. And, of course, the City Council does have the authority to extend outside of the policy as it sees fit. So each year, these each project is reviewed and a determination is made as to whether or not we want to recommend extension or reprogramming of the funds. So for this year's recommendation, there are 34 projects that are recommended for extension totaling about $5.75 million, and then 25 projects which are complete and the funds are recommended for reprogramming totaling about $1.7 million. These recommendations were reviewed by your Community Development Commission and agreed for the most part with the recommendations and made one minor change to reprogram about $41,000 instead of extending it as this program is funded annually. The full commission reviewed and approved the subcommittee's recommendation, and we are bringing forward these recommendations to you from the CDC and the manager. Your attachments B and C include the detail on the dollar amounts and also a short explanation as to why the recommendation is what it is in attachments B and C. The schedule to implement these recommendations are approval of a resolution authorizing the extensions on February the 23rd, and then we also strongly recommend that the reprogramming funds be included as an additional source of funds, as we always do, for your 11-12 budget. We're making this recommendation due to the fact that very strongly encouraging the reprogramming to be included in next year's budget due to the fact that we feel that the federal government is likely to reduce the allocation for CDBG, and we will need those funds to continue our existing CDBG programs in 11-12.
Gene, I just want to stop right here. I cannot any more strongly recommend this. I'm just telling you, I am so concerned about the cuts in CDBG that we'll see in the upcoming budget. And the use of this money to address some of those cuts is very, very critical. So I would recommend that we reprogram these funds as we develop this upcoming budget when we hear from the federal government what we'll have available.
Okay, and so we would include that in the recommendation to the the CDC on March 3rd and then to the City Council on April 20th for your 11-12 consolidated plan, including CDBG budget. And then moving on to the CDBG recovery funds, if you remember, the city received a one-time extra allocation of CDBG funds of $4.7 million. It was part of the President's stimulus program. These funds came with very defined timelines and stringent compliance requirements. Because they were one-time funds, the majority of these funds were allocated to two major maintenance projects at the community centers, Martin Luther King and West Dallas. We had a smaller amount allocated for some public service programs, sidewalk improvements, and administration costs. So consistent with your annual CDBG allocation, the city is allowed to allocate up to 15% of the funds to use for public service projects. So of our allocation, we allocated $700,000 for public service programs, and the contract terms for those budgeted contracts have all expired, and there's a very small amount, $22,334, remains unspent. We can use this funding continuing in public service category, and the manager's recommendation would be to add a site for a summer youth program in the Hamilton Park neighborhood. We've had a lot of community support through our Community Development Commission, their public hearing process. This neighborhood doesn't receive CDBG funds for youth program at this time, and using these funds to spend it this summer would help us meet our expenditure requirements on this grant. and it doesn't impact at all our 15% public service cap for our regular CDBG funding. So, again, the recommendation, reprogram the $22,000 from two projects that have expired contracts. The preliminary adoption for this reprogramming would be on February the 23rd, and then we would also hold a public hearing on April the 13th. Slide 11 just shows you the sources of the funds, the two concepts that had a little bit of leftover funding. And then finally, on page 12 are your key dates for the reprogram extension process and also the 11-12 consolidated plan budget. So you'll be seeing the manager's recommendation and the Community Development Commission's recommendation on April the 20th, and we look to hold final adoption of the 11-12 consolidated plan budget by the end of June. So again, we have some attachments, including the more specifics on the timely expenditure policy, the listing of projects, the dollars, and also a short explanation of each of the recommendations. So I'll conclude there and be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Ms. Margolin.
Thank you, Jean. Could we go to slide 4, please?
Sure.
We're kind of in the middle. It says categorize various CDBG projects based on intended use of funds, and then there are four different categories. Could you explain those categories? Because this is, you know, I've been through this twice, and so I'm going on my third cycle, and I'm still trying to understand how this all works.
Sure.
So just talk about those four items, please.
Okay. We have more detail in Appendix A, but I'll walk you through them. The ongoing programs, these are your operating type programs that you see every year in your budget. They're like the city's regular operating budget. We have projects like child care, dental health, those annually funded programs. So a lot of
so are those the ones that people apply for, that organizations apply for?
Right. What happens is organizations will come down and speak to the Community Development Commission about
right.
funding their concept.
Yes.
And then what we do is we take proposals for the best option to implement that concept. That's how a lot of those.
So when it says ongoing programs, is the presumption that the same programs will be funded year after year? Is that what's meant by ongoing?
We do have some programs that are regularly funded, but it also means that we don't want to extend the funding for most of those because they're funded again in the current year's budget. These are funds that ended on September 30th of the prior year. If they're funded again in this year's budget, we don't necessarily want to supplement it and create kind of a bump in the funding.
Right. Okay. Well, so if we're looking afresh at the next year, are these the four categories that we look at when we're implementing or making recommendations for the next budget cycle?
The CDBG budget itself has different categories. You have like your public services category, your housing, public improvement projects or capital improvement projects.
So this list of four is just for the reprogramming.
It's just it's to help us categorize and make a determination as to whether or not the fund should be extended or reprogrammed.
It is only for the reprogramming exercise. Yes.
Okay, that's
it's not part of the budgeting.
Okay.
If you're doing this, what should you use it for?
Okay.
If you had money left over or programs ended, what would you do with it? What priority?
Okay, so what is unspecified programs?
So sometimes a project will be budgeted with fewer details for the implementation, like the Residential Development Acquisition Loan Program. That's something we do annually, but it may take a little time for staff to go out and identify projects that need to be implemented. So we're just recognizing that certain projects have a longer time frame to identify and implement, and therefore we don't want to automatically reprogram those funds after a year. We want to consider whether or not they're still needed, and if we're working towards a project, that we don't just turn around and cut off the funding for it.
Okay, and then just speak briefly about the Davis-Bacon Restitution Funds. What is that?
So Davis Bacon set certain wage rates for construction projects, and the city has to ensure that its contractors are paying the correct wages to their employees and doing following the federal regulations on that. If we identify an employee who wasn't paid properly, we have to hold those funds and try to make that restitution to those employees. We have to hold them for up to 3 years. So we don't want to reprogram those funds until we've made sure that we've made every effort to make sure those employees get their money.
So would this be, for example, we're contracting with a nonprofit and that nonprofit isn't paying the wages? Is that what they did
some sort of construction project and
right.
they didn't properly follow the Davis-Bacon regulations, we would withhold that funding. We would set it aside, and then that employee is, sometimes it's hard to locate the employee, so we locate that person, we make sure they get paid the money they're owed, and we take it out of these funds that we're holding set aside.
And normally this has more to do with documentation. It's extensive documentation, and so as we go back auditing and looking at these, they will not have adequate documentation, and we are responsible for seeing that happens and seeing people get paid, so that then out of these funds we would do that.
So this is money that, that would have gone to the nonprofit, but we're withholding it? No? I guess what
no,
I'm trying to understand
no, this is money if the nonprofit did not pay Davis Bacon.
Right.
We use the money that we have left from the reprogramming to make up that gap, because we have to make up that gap.
So the nonprofit doesn't make that payment. We do.
If they have not, if they've paid inappropriately, yeah. Not paid.
So we don't have a way of deducting it from them because they should have paid it to begin with?
We can try. We can try, but we are responsible for seeing they get paid correctly, so we may not be able to accomplish that.
It's not just an after the fact. You know, we go out and monitor. We found they haven't followed the regulations, so we said we were going to hold this money and attempt to locate the employee. And then once we make sure that we've located them, then we use the money to pay them.
But if the nonprofit was the one that caused that to happen, we don't have a set way of deducting that.
Well, some of these nonprofits don't even stay in existence. We do everything we can to be sure they're doing it correctly. We do everything we can to be sure they're paying it. Sometimes we withhold a payment to them for the project because they haven't done it correctly. But ultimately, in the end, we have to see that these folks get paid according to these rules.
Oh, I understand that. I'm just trying to see if there's a way that the organization that should have paid it correctly, if we can get them to pay it instead of us.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, many times organizations cease to exist, and that's when we have a problem.
Well, that's a problem on a lot of levels.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. We have Mr. Atkins and then Mr. Allen, I believe.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On page 22, in your index,
mm-hmm.
page 22, I guess line 44,
mm-hmm.
and we talking about it's $80,000 need to be reprogrammed. Could we reprogram to the reentry program, the $80,000?
The recommendation is to simply use the total of the reprogramming funds towards next year's budget because of the great potential for loss in the
We're recommending you not take any of this money for anything that exists today, because we truly believe the CDBG is going to be cut 25-30% next year, and
at a minimum.
We want to save this money so you can protect programs that you've got on the board right now.
For another program?
No. No, it could be keeping your reentry program going.
Right.
And they...
Go ahead. Go ahead. Too many people talking.
Oh, well, that's what the recommendation is. Don't spend this money now, because you may be faced with eliminating the program completely next year when we don't have enough CDBG money. So we're just saying save this and let's make a decision in light of the entire budget rather than put a little bit here and a little bit there.
You know. So what is the total amount of money we had to reprogram?
1.6.
And I'll reiterate, both this budget cycle and next budget cycle, there is a very, very, very high likelihood
that it's at least 25%. It could be substantially north of that.
That's $5 to $6 million out of that money we get. So it's a huge loss.
Well, I just have to whine, you know.
Because the federal government's got to balance their budget just like everybody else.
Because they're $1.5 trillion in the hole.
And I'm just trying to find out, you know.
And that's the word that we're hearing from the administration side, so Lord knows what Congress does.
Right. It's anticipated now that the president's budget will have at least a 25% cut, and that's before it gets to Congress. And the anticipation is there will be significantly additional cuts once it gets to Congress.
Okay, so we looking at the forecast, Mary, you know, in your crystal ball. So I know it's a high number, you know.
No, well, in the CDBG budget, we get in the low 20s, budget, for home and all of it. And if they took a third of it or a fifth of it, it's $6-7 million.
So we probably, you know, we get 20 million from right now. You're looking at maybe 16 million that we're probably looking at.
Probably less than that.
Less than 20.
I'd say right, 14, 14.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Ms. Evans. Ms. Allen?
And this is I wouldn't say standard, but we do this pretty much every cycle. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Sometimes we reprogram during this part of the project. I'm just recommending we don't do this. This is pretty standard business. The only thing different I'm saying is please, let's don't reprogram now. Let's wait until we get the whole budget.
Are you looking for a recommendation from us, or I notice on slide 12 we've got the various steps, so we're just...
Yeah, it'll be on your agenda shortly, okay. And we're just telling you what's coming up, what got recommended for extension, and what we're recommending you do with the reprogramming money.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Seeing no other, Mr. Mayor?
Terrific, appreciate it very much, thank you. Let's move then, if we could, to shopping clerks and... I'm sorry, Ms. Hill.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's only tangentially related because we were talking about our federal money. Council members, please be reminded that I have given you the federal legislative agenda. We've got to get it ready for the March NLC. I've got to have it this Friday. If you need to talk to me, I'm happy to talk to you. But please remember, I've got to have your input by Friday.
And that's an important one. So it has been distributed. You need to get comments. If we end up with differences, we're going to have to resolve those and figure out some way to get it. If we need to vote on it, we're going to have to agenda it. There's a lot of different pieces on
right.
it, and it is very comprehensive. So
you will be voting on it.
Yeah, but I'm happy to take as much time with you as you need, but I've got to have it by Friday. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Let's move then to our final briefing, and that has to do with the shopping carts.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. As we worked on this briefing, we did engage a number of community stakeholders and store owners and merchants. Many of them could not be here with us today, but I do want to take a moment to acknowledge Bobby Inman from Fiesta, who is with us in the audience, as well as James Ross from Walgreens. I'm going to begin on page 3 and emphasize that we started this by saying we share a common goal. The store owners and merchants, the community stakeholders, the homeowners groups, neighborhood associations, and the city, none of us want abandoned shopping carts and the nuisances they create. You see those on page 4. And it's not just nuisances. It can be safety hazards as well whenever they block streets and sidewalks and create blockages in our waterways. On page 5, Vickery Meadows Improvement District is one of the community stakeholder groups that we engaged in this discussion. They actually have a cart collection program in place that they have in partnership with some of the merchants in their area, not all. They collect their carts one time a week, and what you'll see on page 5 is that the number of carts they collect one day a week has gone up over the last several years. They've actually produced a video that they put on YouTube, and we want to show you that so you get a sense of what they're seeing whenever they collect carts that one day a week. The video should launch in this minute here. have audio. I will say there are subtitles too.
Take the mute off.
So tell me your name.
Josh, Bob. I think that he values the neighborhood. Well, if somebody's looking to live here, they probably expect, you know, cheaper rent. I only bought my place because
My name is Ray, and I work on the Victory Meadows Improvement Project, and what I'm doing here is just where we see graffiti, just covering it up and trying to get things cleaned up around the neighborhood and make it a better community. I see quite a bit of cars, yes, Target, and I see them all around all the time. It seems like it's part of the community, but it shouldn't have to be that way. I believe that our company should actually be no back to themselves, or at least what it's up to. And make everybody feel like, oh, it's okay if this person can do it, then it means I can do it and just leave it anywhere I want to.
So tell me your name.
Josh, Paul. I think that he values the neighborhood. Well, if somebody's looking to live here, they probably expect, you know, cheaper rent. I only bought my place because I thought the area was being cleaned up.
My name is Lori Garcia, and I'm from Woodland Apartments. I'm the property manager. How I feel about shopping carts in the neighborhood is they're disgusting. They make the property look dirty. Our maintenance pick them up every morning. On a daily basis, I could say maybe like 4 or 5 every day.
My name is Greg Cornwell, and I own 5 properties here at the Victory Meadows Improvement District area. I think the family shopping cart is a blight on our community. It shows lack of respect for the community. It shows that it's not an area that cleanliness is a priority. Higher crime, a messy community. You have graffiti. You have trash, litter. It just bleeds for itself. So they see the blight in the neighborhood, and that's a tendency to scare people off.
City does have an ordinance adopted by council in November 2003 to regulate shopping carts. On page 6, you'll see that the ordinance requires that, or it makes it a violation for a person to possess a cart off-site. Merchants are required to put contact information and notices warning that it's a violation to remove the carts. And it has a provision saying that if the city collects the cart, the merchants will pay us $25 per cart to retrieve it. Council members requested a strengthened ordinance in November 2010, and we started the process by taking a look at what other cities do to regulate shopping carts, and you'll see some of those features on pages 7 and 8. They generally center around registration for all stores and requirements for how the carts must be collected, setting fees for the collection of them, and giving the city certain rights to dispose of the carts if they aren't collected, etc. Then, in this process, staff engaged the store owners and the merchants for feedback. And you'll see some of those feedback items on page 9. And generally speaking, they don't want to lose their carts either. The grocers and the merchants do not want to lose their carts, although they do provide them as a convenience to their customers. Many of them have preventative measures in place, things like the wheel immobilization technology and contracts to actually actively go out and pick up the carts, but none of it's 100% effective. The merchants were open to pilot testing some additional, you know, solutions and collaborative ideas with the city and with the community. We also asked a diverse group of community stakeholders, and those are listed for you on page 10. Their feedback was generally that they believe the merchants won't take stronger action unless the city requires them to put some teeth into it, as you saw in the video. And they generally support an increase in the fees that the city would charge for two merchants for retrieving abandoned carts. Page 11 outlines the staff recommendation, and that is to implement a six-month pilot program to identify the collaborative solutions. What we want to do is, between March and August, test several areas of the city, diverse areas of the city, take stock of who are the stores, who are the community organizations, what measures do they already have in place to try and deal with abandoned shopping carts, and so what works and what doesn't, and then also to assess what resources the city would need to better enforce the existing ordinance. We would provide our results and recommendations to council after a few updates in October 2011. So to recap, again, the emphasis here is that we have that common goal with the merchants and the community stakeholders. We don't want abandoned carts. They create nuisances and safety hazards. We have an ordinance in place since 2003. And when we looked at other cities, we saw that they have a one-size-fits-all approach. Everybody registers. Everybody has to do the same thing. We think that a six-month pilot program would help us better identify some collaborative solutions where we can recognize that merchants may have voluntary efforts in place to prevent abandoned carts and to target our active enforcement where it's needed. Next steps are outlined on page 13. We're here to receive your direction. We'll ready to do the pilot program and then bring back a recommendation to council in October.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Spada. And thank you, Mary, and thank Forrest as well. Thank you, Forrest, for you all's very prompt response and action toward addressing this. I want to personally thank Ms. Ann Margolin. Thank you, Ann, for putting the cow prod to him and making sure that we get this baby off the ground and moving. It has been 3 years that I've been here talking about shopping carts, and not just in my district, but throughout the city. And Ms. Margolin, again, I commend you for picking up that ball and slamming it through, because now we appear to be in motion to bringing some type of resolve that will have an effect, or that has an effect, over our entire city. It is a terrible sight. It is something that is very dangerous. It is something that really clogs up our communities, and when you look at it, it's a responsibility that we, the grocery stores and the businesses, from the Walgreens to the Fiestas to the Save-A-Lots, the Albertsons, and to all of those folks that have been working along with us, we're collectively now trying to do something about it. I think that Forrest's approach and the 6 month program, we want to send the signal to everyone all over the city that we want to clean up the city and clean these carts up throughout our community. It is something when you see, and it may be Forrest, that we will find ourselves involved in even the Dallas Police Department, because when you see somebody pushing a cart that does not belong to them, that's something that we know and we don't have to guess about is not their property. So that too needs to be a part of what I would like to see us as we move forward, trying to make sure that folks know that you just cannot be walking down the street with a Fiesta cart or with a Walgreens cart, because that cart does not belong to that individual. That also should be a part of the process that as we move forward. And then lastly, I would like for us to see, to begin this city, this pilot program, we take a Saturday in all of our districts and do a citywide shopping cart cleanup, just as we do our community cleanups. And as we initiate this six-month program, so that once we go out into our communities with the respective homeowners associations and all those folks, and we do just one big day of getting these grocery carts off the streets, then we have a better shot at beginning to control the implementation of the first day of the six-month pilot program, because we should be working then with fewer baskets if we collectively do this citywide shopping cart cleanup throughout the whole city of Dallas. So just another suggestion. But with that, Ms. Margolin, let me turn it on to you. You next to Nell, and then Ms. Booth, and then Ms. Southall.
Thank you, Joey, and thank you, Forrest, and everyone else who's participated in this so far. Do we currently enforce the existing ordinance? Do we collect carts and return them for $25?
We do collect them based on reports to 311 on a complaint basis, basically. And our plan would be to collect information over the next 6 months of how well that works, and we can certainly bring some historical information with any updates that we bring to council.
Because I would think at $25 a cart, we could probably have someone out there full-time collecting them. I mean, I don't know if that's the preferred method or whether the stores would like to do it another way, but it seems to me that rather than doing it on a 311 basis, we could more than pay for probably a couple of people to be out there. I'm not necessarily saying that's the way you need to go, but if we wanted to aggressively enforce it, it would seem that it would pay for itself. One thing that I'm concerned about, so I like the idea of doing kind of a trial period, is I really don't ultimately want to see a one-size-fits-all, because there are many, many supermarkets in the city that have no cart problem, and I really don't see a reason for them to register and go through all of this stuff when there's no problem there. I really do just want to target in on those stores where there is a problem. And one of the things that I hope the store owners would consider is finding a way to provide, whether it's sell or give their customers, inexpensive rolling carts of some sort, because clearly they need to get their groceries from the store back to their homes, and they're doing this because they need a way to transport it. And it seems to me that there ought to be some small rolling carts that could be made available to people at a fairly inexpensive price, or given to them at a cost that would be less to the stores than what they lose in lost shopping carts or paying $25 for the city to pick them up. So I hope that the stores will consider finding an easier way for people to get their groceries home. I'm going to look at this six-month thing as a great opportunity and hope that at the end we really have come through it and found a way to have a great impact on this problem, because it really, really is an unsightly problem that just destroys the appearance of neighborhoods. So thanks, Joey.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Ms. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Joey, what would be the 5 target areas?
There may be more than 5 areas. The way we want to approach it, we have a number of grocery stores, to name a few, Albertsons and Fiesta, who said, you know, let's try as many sites as we can to see what's happening in the different locations. So
my question is,
we may have more than 5.
My question is, what is the 5 now?
We don't have those 5 identified.
But what will you have the 5?
We will have the locations, whether it's 5 or more than 5, in the next 3 weeks as we work with the grocery stores to identify those sites.
So how do you determine which area?
The first step is to talk to you, council members, about locations. I will say that some council members have already given us location-specific stores that they want us to pilot.
So what would be the max number we'd be looking at? We have 14 council members, so we have 14. We're not going to do 14, so
we could.
I'm just trying to get an idea.
Well, it's possible that we could do 14.
So not a pilot.
Well, when I say it's a pilot because the council wouldn't have an ordinance that has been adopted to enforce it. So it is possible we could have 14 areas or more with, in terms of being able to monitor what's the best fit for that store.
Well, have you taken consideration to bring departments owner together to be part of discussions? A majority of those shopping carts is going to departments.
That's correct.
Have they been at the table?
We have had apartment managers that we want to bring.
Department owners, not manager owners.
Well, we could get owners, but we want representatives.
I would suggest to get the owners there. If they own apartments and most of those carts is going to the apartments for people who live in the apartments, who would take those carts back to their residence, and the owners could find some kind of way to coordinate that with the city, to have a stationary to pick up the cart or whatever. I think they should be at the table because the majority of the carts you see is around the apartments.
Yes, I agree with that. In fact, I see head nods from Fiesta, and I know that Albertsons talked to us about that as well, that if we were going to have an ordinance, have it where they can have a registration with an apartment complex where they give permission, and that as long as permission was granted, that the person would be responsible to bring it back. That's the real issue. So we're going to work all of those issues through this pilot program.
But I would love, you know, to get with me, you know, so I can deal with it. I got still got a whole lot of apartments in my neighborhood, and I believe I got a good rapport with some of the apartment owners. I think we need to sit down with some of the supermarkets to get work together and try to find it out, because I'm looking at that majority of people who around apartments, you know, they're going to go to the grocery store, and on the mean they can get their food back to their residence is with that cart, and I think it take a partnership with that, you know, and I don't want it to have a breakdown in communication, say, hey, we could work together if no one didn't talk to the apartments owners.
Okay.
And I'd be glad to get a list of all of my apartments, you know, owners and sit down, you know. And that'd be my concern, especially in my district.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I think Ms. Atkins, Ms. Coop.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of things. Well, first of all, I want to, of course, thank Ms. Margolin for her efforts on this, because the area which the video was made is really an issue, and it's not only an issue that it looks blighted, but it's also an issue, one of safety. And I don't know if you have this issue in that district or not, in that area or not, but in my district, in the Spring Valley Coit area, there are a couple of trails that go through there, hike and bike trails, and so that's the easiest way to get to the apartments is by these trails. You know, rather than on a sidewalk, some of the sidewalks are not complete, and rather than on the street. And so they go down the trails with the shopping cart, and then when they get to the apartment complexes, they unload their groceries and they just leave them in the trail. Well, the issue there is people who are riding their bikes and they come around a corner, and, you know, it really is a safety issue. And when we did the graffiti every year, when we do the graffiti wipeout, most of what ours was there was trying to get code over there during that day to clean up all of the shopping carts, because not only did we see some graffiti, but mostly we saw abandoned shopping carts, and that was really the issue of the day as we wandered around District 11. So I want to talk just a second to Mr. Inman, and I thank you for coming here. If you could come up to that microphone for just one second. I do so appreciate you coming. Mr. Inman is an executive with Fiesta Foods. I have not met him before, but I want to thank Fiesta Foods. Their property manager at Spring Valley and Coit, I think it's the property manager for that whole strip shopping there, center there, is trying to get a business organization started with kind of Fiesta Foods being the anchor there, and I think that will greatly help the situation. When you have multiple food stores in an area and multiple businesses that have shopping carts, as we do in that area, it takes some leadership to begin to get the business folks together. And Joe, you might want to use this kind of as a prototype, because if we can pull the businesses together in that area, including all those food stores, because there are several of them, I think it would be very helpful with Sam, with Walmart reopening there at the east end of the corridor right off of Central. They used to have a shopping cart program whereby every single day they would go by and pick up everybody's shopping carts and put them in the back of their truck and then deliver them back. I mean, they had that program for quite some time, and then They closed down, and now they're getting ready to reopen again. But that seemed to help a lot. But if we have everybody on board, and I just would implore you, and I'll be happy to give you my card here in just a second, to try to construct a business organization that can have meetings on a monthly basis. So we have, I agree with Ms. Margolin, one size doesn't fit all. And everybody has a different set of issues. Mr. Atkins just mentioned, you know, it was like one or two food stores. In this area that I'm talking about right here, I mean, we have got like multiple food stores in this area. And so one size won't fit all. And to regulate everybody the same really is not addressing what the real problem is, and the problem is these abandoned shopping carts. And the second thing I'll say is education. If we can get to the schools, a lot of it has to do with folks just not understanding that when they leave that there, there's a consequence of that, you know, whether it be safety or people having to come back by code, city services having to come by and pick it up, or whether it's a ticket or whatever. They don't understand that. And if we could roll out, depending on what area it is of town, roll out some type of education program that's really specifically targeted at that area. And this is where the businesses can help us as well, and we can certainly work with the school district to do this, and the apartment association. I'm glad Mr. Atkins brought that up. If we can work with those three groups to get out an education piece, I think that would go a long way. And also what Mr. Carraway said about rolling it out on one day, you know, because you get a lot of information out on that day, and people become aware of the situation, and you build up to that, just like the graffiti program that we had. You know, you build a lot of buzz around that, and people then begin to understand that that is something that is not going to be, that is no longer going to be accepted. So, Mr. Inman, if I could perhaps meet with you just a second here, and we could kind of exchange telephone numbers, I would really be grateful if you would help us establish a business organization in that area to address this problem. I think it would benefit your company in the area in that particular area. I know you do a great business at Spring Valley Court. Your parking lot is full.
Yeah, we do okay there. Well, and one of the things we do, like you said with Sam, so with Walmart, we have a truck at the store, and that truck, one of the main reasons that truck is to go get carts. So even when we met with the Adventure Metals folks, we were even willing to, if Sam's, whoever it was in the neighborhood, if they wanted to work with us when our truck is out hitting carts, we could gather their carts up and get them back to them. And, of course, we gave them the opportunity to come to us and say, we'd like to be on that program. And we didn't hear anything. I'm not throwing anybody on the bus. I'm just saying that we've got a truck going out there. We could do the same thing. I think that's what we need to do, is probably all work together to get this resolved.
Yeah, and before this came up in this venue here 5 years ago or so, we did look at some. There was a program by which there was kind of electronic.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure how it worked, but it was kind of, they tried kind of a pilot program where electronically, if you took that cart off, it had something on it and it froze the wheels up.
Yeah, it's a very expensive program.
It's very expensive.
And
it didn't really work, because then they started very quickly
lifting
the carts up and over that. That beam, or however that worked.
Right.
And that did not work well. So I think, you know, there's some suggestions we can make for things that didn't work.
Yeah.
But that really didn't work well. So okay. I don't know. And maybe you have some other suggestions as well, you know, kind of in targeted areas.
Okay.
But I'm just very interested in working with you. I appreciate so much you being down here today.
You're very welcome.
The person from Walgreens as well. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you,
Ms. Coop. And we'll go. We have Mr. Salazar, Mr. Allen, then Ms. Madron.
Well, I don't think any of the recommendations do what the neighbors want, which is put teeth. They said put teeth in the program. I appreciate Fiesta being here. Obviously, you know, one thing I would want to know to make any program successful, one is, what is the value of a cart?
Yeah, from our discussions with the merchants, from $150 to $250 is the cost.
Okay. And we're only charging $25 to get it back. What is the cost of us sending someone out there to pick it up and bring it back to the store? What is our cost?
And that is what we intend to determine. The $25 fee was set in 2003.
Right.
We would determine what our actual cost would be based on.
You know, what's our mileage fee, gas, employee cost, all of that? What does that cost the city?
We're currently recalculating that cost that was dealt with back when the council took the vote.
Right.
So we'll bring that back to you. The other thing I wanted to point out to the group is we have it structured such that the street department is responsible to go retrieve those carts. So we want to make sure that that crew is off doing pothole repair and roadway debris.
That's part of our cost of service. And the reason I want to know what the cost is because, you know, maybe it's not worth taking the cart back. You know, you have an abandoned car on the highway. You don't leave it there, and you don't certainly just take it back and charge a nominal fee to the owner. Sorry, you know, your car was left here at the side of the road. You know, we take that car and, you know, we put it for auction. So, you know, and why don't we look at maybe getting a private company and say, hey, look, and pass an ordinance. So if you find an abandoned cart and you tag it and they don't claim it within 24 hours, you can impound it. And you hold it for so many days, and if they don't come claim it, you sell it. You know, and there you have a profit motive for a private company to be able to want to do this. You know, it saves us the problem. It saves the company the problem. They don't want their car. They're not going to, you know, they want their car really bad first. You know, they're going to see where their customers go with the car. They'll have somebody looking out on a video camera if somebody's walking off the property with a car. That's their property. If they covet the property, they will stop that person at the edge and say, look, you know, maybe we need to register you to take your cart over there, but if you don't register, you cannot take this cart off this property. You know, you register that person with that cart. The other option might be if maybe the company, and this might be a good marketing tool, if, you know, I've seen senior citizens carrying those collapsible carts. Because we're not addressing the issue that people have groceries they have to take to the apartment wherever they live. Why not get a company or whatever to sponsor collapsible carts so they can take home, loaded with the groceries that they just paid for at this store. You know, maybe they got to load up their six packs and their beer, you know, their wine bottles now. It's a little heavier. You know, and they take the cart home. It collapses. It doesn't take up a lot of space at the house. They walk it back. And they can reuse it at the store. You know, maybe even make it big enough so they can slide it underneath the big shopping cart. You know, Walmart and Sam's Club, they have really huge carts. And there's no way that someone who lives on the second story of an apartment building can take it upstairs. So if we're looking at putting teeth, put some teeth into it. You know, when we passed this ordinance and we did $25, it was to bring an awareness and attention to the issue. That didn't work. So I would say, what's the value of the cart? What is our cost? And I would ask city attorney to look at, you know, is there an ordinance that we can pass that would allow us to, you know, to get a private company to go and tag these carts that are in these neighborhoods, and if they're not removed within a certain amount of period, you know, let them salvage it. You know, if it's not worth it to the owner to go get their cart, then why do we return it for them for $25 when it might be costing us over $200 or $300 to return these carts? You know, why do we have to pay the city? I mean, we're in a budget crunch. You know, this should not be borne by the citizens of Dallas. It should be borne by the companies making a profit on the selling of these groceries and the beer and the wine. They had $1 million for that. They can certainly find some money to get a program that works for their customers. We want to help these customers. And maybe the cart replacement with the smaller carts that they can take home, and they can register, you know, they can check them out and check them back in. But that might be an option to look at, you know. So let's put some teeth into ordinance and not just go do another study and come back and let's pilot programs. Let's look at a solution that works. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Well, let me just add just a couple of quick suggestions. Mr. Inman, and I would just ask you, there's a cost that's associated with the stores,
yeah,
not just yours, but all of them, in cart collection.
Correct.
A suggestion and joy of mine would be that we simply take a look at that cost on an annual basis, and then let's see what that cost, of course, is, and hire two kids
right
from the neighborhood, and let them, that employs two kids. It's just a thought. That would employ a couple of kids, and those would be the kids that would keep the responsibility of keeping the shopping carts and notifying of when someone would, you know, they would be like the shopping cart czar.
There you go.
Of,
okay.
the store.
Okay.
And as Ms. Cook said, this is not something that fits all neighborhoods.
Right.
For example, the stores on Lancaster, we have a shopping cart major concern.
Okay.
But that would certainly be one that where two young kids could have a job, and their responsibility would be the parking lot, keeping the cars up, keeping them out, and folks would not be able to just walk away with them. I would suggest that we just look at the budget of what it costs.
Okay.
And just take that under a consideration. And it is not for the whole city. It would be for those areas that we have these type of major concerns in that we would be able to do that. Just the
okay. That, like I said, we have a truck at the store. We have a driver. Maybe we need to look and see if we can get other folks, like you said, maybe from within the neighborhood that will gather the cars. First thing we do, the Victory Metals folks.
Preferably some young guys that's looking for employment.
Right.
Legal employment.
Well, like the Victor Metals group,
right?
They're folks. I'm not sure where they get their employees, but they gather the carts every Thursday, and we have a contract with them, arrangement with them. We'll give them $1 for every cart they bring on Thursday, so we can do stuff like that. And I want to say real quick, the cost of the shopping carts. Our cost. We have two types of carts. We have a refurbished cart that we get for the stores where we go through a lot of carts. They're $65, $75, and our most expensive cart is $120. Now, City of Plano has an ordinance where it's $75. City of Irving has an ordinance where it's $40. I mean, at $120 a cart, we're gonna get those carts. We're gonna be proactive to get those carts. But I'd just like to take into consideration when we do this, we're talking about, you saw the numbers of the carts, how many carts we'd be doing. We're gonna do our part, trust me. We're gonna do our due diligence to get the carts. But in some of our neighborhoods, that may be the only way our customers have to get their groceries home. And we do have the little two-wheel carts. We have them at the store. They're for $15. I mean, we could work something out if somebody wants to work it out. We have the Baggy Buddies. It's a little plastic handle device that you could put four or five bags on at the Skillman Avery store. We're trying to do everything we can, but we're in the business, we're in the customer service business, and if that's the only means that person has, if they're going to come buy groceries with us and they've got to get the groceries home, that's why we're doing our best to go back. We even have three delivery vans in some of our stores. So.
Thank you, Mr. Allen, and then Ms. Madrona, and then Mr. Cadet.
You know, I just want to say, you know, thanks for your attitudes, because you're exactly right. You know, those are the customers that are out there. And this Victory Meadows is one of the highest density areas that we have in the city of Dallas. And they have no other way to really make the mass transit there is great, but it doesn't go exactly to the stores. So the service that you're trying to provide, go back, pick them up. Straight up business on the deal. You said $120, you know, per cart. We saw in the video, I think 40, whenever it was good with math, that's $4,200 coming right out of y'all's pockets, you know. But the other side is those folks got to get the groceries home. So if this is really a complicated issue that we have, because the stores, we've got to make sure that you guys make a profit. We want you spread all out to all the different areas that you got. And if you make profit, you make money, that's what you do. And then, you know, but our citizens have got to be able to get those groceries home. So, and then, you know, but the grocery carts, they don't have, you know, somebody's got to push them outside your parking lot. Excuse me. So, it's been a long day. anyway, it's a complicated issue, and but other cities that have, particularly probably in the eastern section where they have high density already, I suspect have already kind of tackled this in some way. Those little carts that you're talking about, that might be a very dignified way of doing that. But hats off goes to this Victory Meadows Improvement District. That's the district. Those guys are out there. You saw the video. They're bringing pride to their neighborhood. And so it's that awareness issue that you see. And that Victory Meadow, I mean, it backs right up to my neighborhood. I look at them as me. I look at Victory Meadows. I know it belongs to a couple of my councilmen, but it backs up to me. And I've always looked right at them as mine. So anyway, complicated issue. It's got to be fair on both sides. We sure don't want to do anything that's not fair on both sides, because you guys want to do what's best for your customers and such, and we want to make sure our folks are able to get their groceries home. And at the same time, we want them to have pride in their neighborhood. So hopefully after 6 months, you guys can work all that out. So, you know, good luck to you.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. Ms. McGraw.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway. Ms. Margolin, thank you very, very much for bringing this up, and I joined you in signing the memo. And I think you were somewhat surprised that I had the same issue in my district. To Mr. Roth and Mr. Inman, thank you very much for joining us today. I think Mr. Allen said it perfectly. These people need to get these groceries, or shopping at Walmart, get these things to their apartments or place of where they live. So it is complex, and so I hope that we come up with something creative and something that will work for the community and for our businesses. Joey, will you please walk me through? Either I send you a picture of a card at a certain location, or I call in, someone calls in to 311. Walk me through what happens.
Right now, a request would be received through 311, and it would be sent to street services so that their vehicles out in the field would be able to pick them up and then return them to the owner, you know, once they pay the fee.
What's the length of time? Are they out 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, 2 weeks?
I'll have to gather that information and bring it
back
to you.
So we don't know exactly.
Yes.
Okay. Are the locations that shopping carts are being picked up, is that documented? Can you tell us what areas are the most problem?
Yes.
We probably can't. Just want to share with you what I worked out with one of the locations that I have with Dallas Housing Authority. I met with Ms. Russ and one of the DHA property managers. And, you know, it wasn't going to stop. You know, on the average, I saw 17, 18 a week in this property. So I worked out with the manager to have all the shopping carts in the property to be pushed at one certain location. And then he would call that grocery store, and then that grocery store would come and pick them up once a week. Now, I mean, not a resolution for everyone, but in this complex, it works, because it wasn't going to stop. The people needed to get their groceries to their homes. So this was one way that we try to, instead of having it all over the project, it would be in one location, and then the grocer would know to come in. It was, they are his customers, and so he was trying to help out that way. And so it was a partnership there, but it worked. I think that was it. I think once you get the information that everybody else wanted, I just wanted to make sure that those locations were documented where most of the shopping carts are. What do we do with the ones that end up in creeks and in alleys? They just get picked up as well?
The anecdotal information I've heard is that we don't have much luck returning them, and they usually end up being, scrapped or disposed of in some other way.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Madrana. Mr. Cadain.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Joey, when most of these are apartment dwellers in most of the areas. I know in Duane's area, got a lot of homeowners because we went up and down your streets, and they were all up and down. And I'm just wondering, and I know they've got to get their groceries home. And the one thing that I think that Mr. Hennings said was the little two-wheel cart. I mean, it's cheaper to try to give them the smaller carts and let them have them and use those if they'll use them. But if not, maybe work out something with the... And I think Ms. Salazar mentioned that too, is give them some kind of vehicle they can use. But maybe we could work out something with the apartment owners where they've got carts there. The people can check them out at the apartment to carry them to the store, have designated that they're for that apartment, so when they take them in the store, they know that's the apartment cart, and they just take it back. And that way they put it in a rack at the apartment, it's not all over the street. So that might be a good solution to work with food. And even the homeowners, let them have their address on the cart. If they use that cart back and forth to the store, and they're responsible for it, and if it's found on the street, they're going to get ticketed. So it might be a good way to resolve that, to where they don't have to worry, yeah, we've got a cart, let's take, we'll get it, and they check it out at the apartment and take it and bring it right back. So that might be a good way to try to work with them, because we do have to, there's folks that have no way to get the groceries home. So that might be one way to do it. But I feel for the store owners. I see these carts everywhere, and I say, good. And I figured they're at least $150. And I said, man, you guys are losing money. And I guess we're going to end up paying for it. But that's increased groceries to pay for the carts to get around. But I feel for the store owners, because it's not them. It's the people buying the stuff, taking their carts off. And that's not right. That's just totally wrong, and we don't have a big enough force to watch and patrol that. So maybe if they could work something out together where they had carts, and sure, take that cart home, put their signs on it, and they're responsible for that cart then. So that might be a good solution. But thanks for what you guys are doing too.
Thank you, Mr. Gavang. Mr. Mayor Tom.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It is now 11:24 on February 2nd, 2011. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney in the following matters that were described on today's agenda. Wood versus Leopard, legal issues regarding the Bankston Trial Board hearing, claimed by Alan Ramirez and Hernandez and Garcia versus the City of Dallas. Anticipate that this will probably go 30 minutes, and then we'll have to play it by ear to see if we do lunch and come back afterwards or that. So we'll leave it. We'll see how long it takes. With that, if we could go ahead and clear, we'll just go ahead and have the briefing right, the executive briefing right here. We're back in session, 12:18.
Our speakers for this afternoon, I'm starting with the speakers that were not here this morning. Tamara Washington, Kevin McMahon, Anthony Tate, Deborah Westbrook, Arita McLean, and David Kaza-Afar. Our afternoon speakers start with Juanita Wallace, Leslie Allen Davis, and Gwayne Wooten. While Ms. Wallace is coming forward, let me recite the rules for speaking. Citizens and other visitors attending City Council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that city session of the City Council. You have 3 minutes to speak. You'll see the 3 minutes on the board. You'll see a 30 number flashing. That means you have 30 seconds, and then red numbers meaning stop. So you can state your name and address for the record.
Juanita Wallace, 1409 South Lamar, Law 341, Dallas, Texas, 75215. Protocol been established, and I'm not going to use the time announce everybody's name out there. Charge for NAACP unit. The NAACP must be strong enough in numbers and so effective that no one, no mayor or city, no governor or any state, no congressman or any party, no president of the United States, and no foreign ambassador will dare to commit any indignity against people of color without realizing the NAACP will charge them on the platform, in the press, in the courts, and in the streets. So I say to you, council members, raise your hand if you are responsible for head of the line CNG. If you voted for that. Thank you.
if you realize that what you voted for is killing a whole bunch of people, why don't you go back to the table and look at that vote and rescind it? Election is coming, people, and we have the records here. We will help our voters to understand that you are heartless and you've instituted a mandate that is unprecedented in the United States. Head of the Lions, the yellow cap, is no more than a power play on your part and a power play that is driving citizens of the United States out of business. Because I was not born in Dallas nor in the state of Texas, I see the blatant differences that exist. And these differences are called discrimination. You accept discrimination because you think it's a norm. And it's discrimination no matter where you look at it. How you look at it, it's discrimination. For example, even yesterday, TxDOT cleaned all of the north side of town, and the southern side of the town was still left a mess. Let me leave this with you very quickly. God is a great equalizer. And the bottom line is, if you look at the storm, the blizzard, the snow, you can see that not only the Texas independent drivers are not working, but also some of the other people that you put in high esteem are not working. So the bottom line is, he fixes so you can't make money off a yellow cab. CNG will explode if it's hit by another automobile in the rear. And the bottom line is, you're doing this simply because, once again, a power. Head of the line is a policy that is unacceptable. Let the drivers replace their outdated cars with vehicles that meet aggressive pollution efficiency guidelines. The bottom line is, you said because of efficiency and because of EPA, that can't be the reason. So the bottom line, it has to be another reason, Mr. Mayor. Go ahead and let the city council people know what the other reason is. Thank you very much.
Leslie Abbott, Alan Davis, Wayne Williams. Mr. Mayor, that's all of the speakers that have signed up.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. At 12:22, we're in recess. We're adjourned. Thank you. We're adjourned. Adjourned. We're done.